Welcome to this episode of the Strong Kind Podcast. This episode is with Matt Power. Matt is a gymnast and a physical therapist. We had a really great discussion on gymnastics and how, gymnastics is A, an awesome sport, but B, how, people tend to get injured in gymnastics, and it can be a tough sport to be persistent in and to do for a long time. We also talked about just general rehabilitation from gymnastics oriented injuries and maybe how to go about helping youth athletes manage pain and continue to have long gymnastics careers. I really enjoyed this conversation with Matt. It was a great discussion, and I hope you enjoy it too. Thanks for being here. Peace. All right. So I have no idea about gymnastics. So that's kind of where I want to start is what got you into gymnastics as a kid?
It's kind of a funny story. My sister wanted to do gymnastics, and my mom basically just asked me, like, hey, I'm signing your sister up for gymnastics. Do you want to try? And I said, yes. So we started at a summer day camp. It was like a couple hours a day over the summer. And it was really just something we did over the summer, and I really enjoyed it. And then in middle school, my school had a school gymnastics team, which is actually, I don't know about other parts of the country, but it's like pretty rare in New York. So I just joined that team. And again, it was really just more of a seasonal thing. And then in high school, my school district actually dropped the team. But one of my coaches coached at a club. So that's when I really started getting into it and being a little bit more competitive. And it was just something I always enjoyed. So I kept doing it through college, after college. And now I coach and do physical therapy with gymnasts. So it's something that's always been a part of my life. And it just increased and increased throughout my life. Just stuck there.
Remind me, how old were you when you started?
I was about 7, okay. I think, when I started that summer camp. Yeah.
Okay. So you were 7. How tall are you now?
I'm 5'8".
Okay, you're 5'8". Do you feel like it changed your body from a standpoint? Like, you're a muscular guy, but do you feel like you became a gymnast body, you developed a gymnastics body? Or were you maybe predisposed to it because of just height and proportions or stuff like that? What do you think?
That's a good question. I was always on the taller side for gymnasts. Yeah, I remember
5'8" is kind of tall for a gymnast, right?
Yeah. But it's funny. One of the things I tell kids now is when I was a gymnast, I always wished that I was 2 inches shorter. If I was 5'6", I feel like it would have helped a little bit more, just with body proportions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
For me, my arms are a little bit longer, so it was hard for some strength positions on rings.
Which makes you a good deadlifter, though. I mean, they'll help you deadlift over time here.
No. It does. Yeah. But now that I'm done with gymnastics, I kind of wish I was 2 inches taller.
Yeah.
Because I'm on the shorter side of average person. I mean, I think 5'8" is technically average male.
5'8" is technically, yeah, it's technically average person. But
yeah,
there was a good meme a little while ago that I saw. It's the difference between I think it was 5'11", 5'10" and 5'11". It's when you're 5'11", it's you're a giant, basically. When you're 5'10", you're looking up at people.
Yeah, I do feel, I mean, if I go to a gymnastics meet, I'm oh, I'm pretty tall.
Yeah.
But if I go walk around New York City or something like that, I'm oh my God, I'm so short. I feel like a child.
It's crazy. Who was, I think, the shortest NBA player ever was Muggsy Bogues. He was only 5'3". That's pretty wild. Spud Webb was 5'6". Yeah, dude, Muggsy Bogues was only 5'3". That's wild.
Was anyway. Who was was it Nate Richardson or something like that? He was 5'8".
Nate Richardson. I feel like Nate Richardson, NBA. Oh, maybe. Yeah. Okay. Point guard. 5'9".
Okay.
But he was really short.
He could dunk.
Yeah. Yeah. But comparatively, I mean, Muggsy Bogues was super short. And some of these other guys are really short. Well, I don't know what we got on the NBA players. I was just looking at really short.
Yeah.
Well, just the
no, it is
comparison
interesting.
between like the tallest player and like Muggsy Bogues. Like the tallest player is literally like Muggsy Bogues is to his waist.
Yeah.
Which is unbelievable. So what is it? Just like clarify for me. Like I have a general concept of like when you're smaller, it's just easier. It's kind of just easier to move when you're a smaller person, like to some degree. Right. But like, what is it about that is helpful for gymnastics?
So yeah, there's a lot of stuff behind it. And just to like clarify, there's like a lot of, I put out a decent amount of stuff about this. Like a lot of people think gymnastics just stunts your growth, but in my opinion, it's more of just like a survival of the fittest. Like
oh yeah,
there
it's
have been,
definitely, it's selection bias.
Yeah. But shorter gymnasts, there's a good amount of stuff. So like their body proportions are smaller. So if you think about like from a biomechanics standpoint, like the lever arms are shorter, so it's easier, like your muscles have to do less work essentially.
Yep.
So like in like everybody thinks of like a cross, like your arms are straight out. So if your arms are longer, your muscles are going to have to do more work to keep them there. So like that's a big thing. The other thing too is just like strength to weight ratios. Like smaller people typically a little bit lighter. So again, less work that your muscles have to do in order to get that like power and strength developed. I mean, those are really like the two big things that make shorter people like more gymnastically inclined.
Yeah. No, it's one of those things. It's like people, yeah, you're seeing the, you know, you watch the Olympics and you're like, it is more just suitability for the like sport than it is that the gymnastics makes people that way, right?
Yeah.
Like being a 5 foot tall female who has done gymnastics for a long time, you know, like is going to it, like being 5'8" is going to be harder to maintain and like continue to perform. It doesn't mean you can't do it for a female or whatever, right? But it's more of a survivorship bias than it is gymnastics makes you this way. It's no, like you are suited for gymnastics and it's easier to continue type of thing, right?
Yep.
It's just the reason, same reason that really tall dudes are more likely to get into the NBA than me or you, right?
Yeah.
Because like also there's just this feed forward of, oh, you're tall, we're going to put you at, you know, center and you're going to get more touches and XYZ than otherwise, right?
Right, but playing basketball doesn't make you tall.
Exactly, yeah. But so that's a great way to put it, right? You should just put that out on a regular basis.
That's what I should do.
Yeah. That would be, well, there we go. See, this is the power of long form conversation, right?
Yep.
So what is it about, well, take me through the differences between men's gymnastics and women's gymnastics a little bit.
Right. So women's gymnastics, 4 events, men's gymnastics, 6 events. Six. That's how you do six. So, and there's a couple overlap. So vault is exactly the same men's and women's. It's the same apparatus.
Hey, wait. Why do women only get 4 events? What the hell?
That's actually a good question. I don't know how that developed. I got to look that up and then yeah, I'm going to get back to you.
I know you're not to blame for it. So
yeah. Floor, very similar. Women's gymnastics, they do a floor routine to music. So there's a lot of dance, leap elements to it in addition to tumbling. Men's gymnastics, it's just straight tumbling with a little bit of, they call it like non-acrobatic. So typically you'll see, it's basically anything that doesn't flip for the most part. So you see like handstands, you'll see like circling and flare elements. It looks like they're breakdancing. And then women do balance beam, and uneven bars. Technically the event is called the uneven parallel bars because it used to be the men's parallel bars, but one was higher than the other. And then as it's evolved, they spread out. So that's an interesting piece of gymnastics history. And then men, they do, like I said, parallel bars, which is just the two bars side by side. They do horizontal bar or high bar, which is just the one bar. And then they do rings, which, like I said earlier, is like everybody thinks of lacrosse. It's a big strength event. And then they do pommel horse, which is typically everybody's least favorite event. It's pretty much like the least like all the others. So
Why
that's
don't
where you're gonna see.
why don't people like pommel horse?
So it's essentially the least like every other event. So if you look at like floor and vault, one's tumbling, one's running fast and then tumbling. High bar and P bars are pretty similar. Rings is kind of different than the other ones, but it's very strength oriented. So if you're strong, you're good at it. People don't really fall on it a lot. And then pommel horse, it's the only event for the most part where you're doing that those circling skills. It's really easy to fall off. So when you go to a meet, that's where you're going to see a lot of kids, like their scores going down, because if you fall off two, three, four times, that tanks your score. So it's just a very nerve-wracking, different event. It's also not that fun to watch. Like a lot of, whenever the Olympics come around, people will ask me like, how come everybody does the same thing on pommel horse when they're really not?
Yeah.
It just all looks the same.
It looks the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the guy's name? Steven? Was his name Steven?
Even Natarajic, yeah,
Yeah.
he kind of made pommel horse a little bit cooler. And not even really for like what he did. Like, yeah, he went out and hit his routine, but
Yeah.
I feel like it was more like the memes that came about it.
He was
Like, this
just
guy
the
literally just like sat through the entire meet, took off his glasses, and made it so that America won a bronze medal.
Yeah. Yeah, which is awesome, right?
It
Like
is awesome.
that's the power of I've always gone back and forth because like I'm a generalist, like at heart, like I'm a very general, like I think, but like you need specialists, right? Like that guy's a specialist, and
Yes.
it's one of those things that it makes sense now that you're telling me kind of the what the structure of gymnastics competition and so which is like your favorite or what did you prefer doing?
So my favorites were floor and parallel bars.
Okay.
I like floor because it's floor is like very similar to the reason why kids get into gymnastics. Like, it's a lot of high flying, flipping, it's just cool. It's fun. Training, it's fun because most of the time you're going into the foam pit. You're doing some type of trampoline. I just like, and then I liked P bars mostly because I was pretty good at it. It was just like most of my routines were like pretty easy to hit. I scored well on it. And it was kind of fun to train too. Some of the skills that I worked, they were just enjoyable.
Yeah. No, I like, yeah, gymnastics is, it's a really, it's a very, it's just different than like organized. It's different than anything I had ever really been exposed to, right? So, but also like it makes you tremendously strong and athletic, right? Did you play other sports?
I did. I was a very like multi-sport oriented kid growing up. So like in middle school, well, I played a lot of soccer growing up, and then I kind of fell out of it. And then when I got to like middle school and high school with like school sports, I tried a whole bunch of things. Like, I played football in middle school. I wrestled. I tried to play baseball. I wasn't very good at it. But I kept trying out, and then eventually I kind of got the message with that and did track, and then I also dove a little bit, which has a lot of overlap with gymnastics. So yeah, I played a lot of sports, growing up, but like gymnastics is the one that I just kind of stuck with.
What do you think made you stick with it?
That's a good question. I think it was definitely the most fun. Like, I was a very ADD kid, so it like kept my attention. It's not like in football or soccer or baseball, like there's like a lot of down periods, whether you're like not on the field or like you're waiting in line to like do a drill or something like that. In gymnastics, like you're constantly moving, constantly developing. As soon as you get like one skill, you're moving on to the next one. So there's always some sort of challenge. There's no one that like is ever really like done with gymnastics as far as like a development. standpoint goes, like there's always skills you can be working on. There's always something that can make you better. Not to say that there isn't with other sports, but like, you know, football, baseball, soccer, like it's always going to be like running, doing something with the ball. Like
Yeah.
everything's is that you're essentially working on the same thing over and over again.
Yeah. Like it's a progression of the same skill versus like there's a new skill that you can go work on, kind of that's tangential to you
Yeah.
did this, right? Yeah. It's just, it also just like makes people like unbelievably strong, like and
Yeah.
move, like it's crazy. And is that like, there was a guy that went to my gym here in Iowa City that he was a gymnast at the university, and he was just so, he was unbelievably strong in certain ways, and then like, and he was very strong in general, but like he also was like not very strong in some other ways. But like, what are some of the things that you see in like the gymnastics community that, or like in gymnastics, that where people get really strong, and maybe then where they don't get very strong, or where like the chinks kind of show up?
Yeah, so it's interesting. Like, there's a lot of jokes about how gymnastic, like, gymnasts are like the most uncoordinated, coordinated people. So, like, obviously, you need to have some level of coordination to, like, swing around a bar, let go, flip, catch. Like, there needs to be that level of coordination. But, like, a lot of time, like, you see a lot of gymnasts, they just, like, randomly trip and fall for whatever reason. If you ever find someone that's done like gymnastics their entire life, it'll probably be really funny to watch them try to like throw a ball or throw a frisbee or something like that. So
Yeah.
like they are very like good at what they do, but other like highly coordinated movements, like it doesn't transfer very well. The other big thing too is like especially in men's gymnastics, a lot of stuff is very like forward. So like pommel horse, your hands are in front of you, rings. It develops a lot of like anterior or like chest, like pecs, like all that stuff, biceps, shoulders, but like they have a lot of issues with pulling. So like rowing exercises. I mean, most gymnasts do a lot of pull-ups, but a lot of pulling exercises are more difficult. And then there are some, especially men's gymnasts, they try not to develop their legs too much because like it's a body weight
Yeah.
sport. So sometimes you get some people that are a little bit weaker in their legs. So like squatting, lunging, deadlifting, sometimes it doesn't always transfer. I mean, it
I
depends on
that's
the kid,
I
but
didn't want to say it like, and because he was still like a pretty decent squatter, but like
yeah.
comparatively, like for what he could do, like he could do like so many pull-ups and like ring dips, it was insane. But then
Yep.
like squatting was like, you know, comparatively like really challenging for him, right? And you know, I think so much of that is just practice, and it's like it's hard for, I think it was hard for him because he was so strong in certain areas to look weak in other areas. Like,
Yep.
do you see that? Do you see that happening?
I do see that sometimes. It's interesting. Like, there are some gymnasts that don't want, and I think it's because it's like such a perfection driven sport that they don't want to look dumb in any scenario. So like even working on new skills, like working on any new skill, like there's going to be a learning curve. And you get some kids that like don't want to fall, don't want to do anything. So I could definitely see that transferring into like something like weightlifting where you don't want to be seen, you know, with not a lot of weight on the bar, or you don't want to be seen like learning something new or developing a new skill. But I mean, there are some kids that just don't care. Like they'll fall on their face over and over and over again, because
Which is
that's just
probably,
part of the learning process.
that's the best way to be, probably, right? Just to
Yeah.
save effort and not care. It's so hard to not care, gosh. But yeah,
Yeah.
like, so what, when you, okay, so you know, you're a physical therapist now. What took you into that route? What made you say, I want to be a physical therapist?
That's another funny story. So when I went to undergrad, I thought I wanted to be a lawyer, and I was a criminal justice major. at SUNY Brockport, and I like that's the career path I wanted to go down, but I was also like interested in like human movement, exercise science, like all that stuff. I took a exercise science class in high school, and it was like something that was interesting to me, but I never really thought I wanted to make a career out of it. So I went to Brockport. I was a criminal justice major. I was taking like a couple of kinesiology classes. The criminal justice major made me realize that I absolutely hate the criminal justice system. So I got out of that. I actually finished the degree because I had like, when I realized this, I had like two classes left or something like that.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, might as well finish it. But then I switched my major to exercise science. And I just like, I was looking at careers in like exercise science and like healthcare and stuff like that. And I just really liked physical therapy. I felt like it was the perfect blend of the two. Like it wasn't like a doctor where you're, you know, not really spending a lot of time with the people you're working with. But it wasn't like a lot of the other exercise science-y stuff I was looking at was more like research based, and I didn't really enjoy that, didn't really seem too attractive to me. So I shadowed some physical therapists and I really liked it. So then I kind of went into that, went to PT school. So
No, it's like it's crazy because like the rosy colored glasses of like what being a PT could be like are often like cool, right? And I think everybody's like kind of like, yeah, I mean, like they're doing notes and you're like, you're not having to do that. So you're just kind of shadowing and you know, then you also just like there were aspects of it where like this is super boring, but there are a lot of like redeeming moments. You're like, I could do this for a while. And then it just becomes like, damn, like the corporate side of the PT space is just like effed it over. Like I had exposure to relatively small local practices that, you know, were had somewhat control over what they're doing. The problem was that they were just getting penny pinched out of getting reimbursement, and then they sold off and the bigger group just like killed it, right? And that's what's happening, right? But it would be like, honestly, I think it would be like the sweetest job ever if it was like you had to see six people a day for like an hour and you got to actually like, and people were motivated, you know, people were like, I want to do this. It would be awesome. And there would be a lot of job satisfaction and it would be good. You still have to do notes or whatever. That'd be fine. But like, if people got paid decently well to do like that, it would be incredible. But that's not what it is, right?
It's not realistic.
Yeah. Which we can talk about that more as we go. But like when it comes to being like a PT now in the gymnastics space, like what are the things that you see that the gymnastics world maybe struggles with?
Oh, that's a good question. So I think there's a lot of I'm trying to figure out where I want to go with this, but
That's
there's a
fine.
lot of, I guess, myths that you could say in the gymnastics world. It's a very like slowly changing community, and there's a lot of like, well, we've always done it this way. This is how we're gonna do it. And you know, I think that's starting to change a little bit, but it's very slow. A big thing, you know, I just talked with someone else about is like oversplits. So if you don't know what that is, you're basically doing like a split on the ground with either your front foot or your back foot on like a paddle mat or something like that. Basically like a raised surface to
Yeah,
get a little
trying to
bit
go
more of a
deeper.
stretch.
Yeah.
And like when I was a kid, we would do them. We would sit there for like 5 minutes, and then like our coach would come around and like push us down. And like that was essentially like how you were going to get your split. And you know, there were some kids that were a little bit more flexible than others. And like if you were one of the unflexible ones, like myself, like you were gonna get pushed down, you were gonna sit there for longer. And like nobody ever like looked at it and was like, well, he's not getting better at his split. Like, so maybe this isn't working. It was just like, well, he needs to do more.
Yeah.
And like I said, I think stuff like that is starting to change. Like people are starting to do like different things, like using like soft tissue techniques or like stretching a little bit differently where you're not pushing people down, doing like strengthening throughout their range of that range of motion, to get like your body to calm down. I think that's getting a little bit better. I think the other thing too is like strength training in gymnastics has been a little crazy too. And a lot of that, it's kind of like the same deal where it's like, we're just gonna go until we die, and that's how you're gonna get stronger. Like, go do 100 dips, go do 100 push-ups, go do 100 pull-ups, and like when you're done with it, we're just gonna do more. And like one of the things that I really like to talk about is trying to incorporate like weightlifting or weight training principles into gymnastics, because like doing all those reps isn't going to make you stronger or more powerful. It's gonna make you stronger for gymnastics, or like weightlifting is gonna make you stronger for gymnastics. But a lot of those myths center around like making you bulky, losing flexibility, or like getting hurt, which like anybody who reads like one research article on weight training knows that that's untrue.
Yeah, it's so wild. It's like how long? Because I mean, my wife Mary was like in the dance community too, and like flexibility in the dance community is like you need to be long and slender, and like we're gonna stretch to get there, and like
Yeah.
it's just it's kind of funny because so much of like life is just like how we just looked at things like one way. We just tried to force everything into the same box, right? And it's like, hey, Johnny's not getting more flexible with the same approach that this other person is. And it's like, because so much of stretching that people, I think, I don't know, maybe, anybody who's not like in fitness or rehab who listens to this, maybe doesn't get it's like stretching is about relaxation. Like it's allowing, like you have more like muscular length that can be accessed via relaxation that then if you can get into that position your body will start like it still should be a little uncomfortable, right? But like then your body will start to add sarcomeres and series and relax even, and you build the capacity to go further. But like forcing somebody doesn't necessarily work, especially if they don't have like the adaptive capacity to like get there, right? And like almost cruel.
Right. But that's the other, like, the big thing in gymnastics, like old school, I call it old school gymnastics, but like it's all about like beating yourself to death,
Yes.
and like that's what's gonna get you what you want. And I mean, I say it in gymnastics, but like it's really other, like the same thing happened in like football, like weightlifting. Like it was just, we're gonna go until we can't go anymore. We're gonna rest for a little bit, and then we're gonna keep going. And like you look at gymnastics, like there was, I forget what it was, but there was like an old documentary about like how a lot of this stuff started with like the Carolis and Nadia Comaneci and all that stuff. And like they would bring all these kids together and they would work them to the bone. And it was basically the kids that survived, like they were going to the Olympics. But nobody talked about like the 15, 20 kids that are growing up now with like severe lower back pain, or like they can't walk, like all these other ailments. They just talk about like, oh, well, so and so won a gold medal and it was all worth it.
Yeah.
Was it?
Well, and it's like there's so one of the interesting like parallels is like Olympic weightlifting, right? Like the US in the Olympics for weightlifting, the powerhouses are they're just to be super blunt, they're communist countries, right?
Right.
With sports schools that like the Chinese Olympic lifting, like their lifters look a certain way, not because they are, I mean, partly because they are Chinese, but also because they have selected for and they've created a survivorship bias around people that are probably going to be select or good at Olympic weightlifting, right? The like Russians and Bulgarians, like they just took 500 kids and they put them through the gauntlet and saw who could survive, right? So it's the survivorship narrative. And really so much of it is just like our narratives on like what training is are just based upon the fact that like people respond pretty well to training. Like you can beat people up for the first 6 to 12 weeks of a training, of their training, right? You respond really quickly to some of this stuff. Your capacity, you know, can change and improve pretty quickly, but then it slows down drastically and you actually have to create like tissue adaptations, right? Yep. And some people are going to be more respond better to the others, but we're like so many like non strength and conditioning oriented, even in people in the strength and conditioning world, but like coaches who are sport oriented, they just see like the micro cycle of like that worked for 12 weeks. It should work again. And it's like, yep, the kid can't handle the same amount of volume and the same amount of intensity in like in that time frame, right? And but nobody ever changes, right? And then there are always people who just like there are some people who are going to make it through, and that's great. But you how many kids did you, like you said, did you ruin this experience for? So
yeah,
when it comes to like what are the things that you have a hard time, like you're talking to a 16-year-old kid, like what are the things that they're doing that you're like, all right, like this is that they don't see as their problem, but you can identify as their problem?
So a big thing is like pushing through like pain or discomfort. In fact, I just talked to someone this week about this, is like, you know, right now gymnastics season is like ramping up. States is normally like the first or second week of March. As for like upper level kids, regionals is about the first or second weekend in April, and then nationals is normally in May. So like this is when kids are really starting to make that push, put a lot of their difficulty in their routine and stuff like that. Especially when you're talking to like a 16 or 17 year old, they're thinking about college gymnastics, like looking good in front of colleges. So if something hurts, they're not going to tell their coach, not going to tell their parents, not going to take a step back, and reduce like their training volume. They're going to keep pushing through. So it is hard because, you know, colleges sometimes will just like move on to the next kid if that kid takes a step back or doesn't do a meet or something like that. But at the same time, like if you keep pushing through, you're going to get more hurt, and then, you know, you're going to be 10 steps back instead of one step back moving forward. Yeah. And I mean, a lot of that has to do with like the NCAA recruiting process, which I'm not super in tune with. But I know there's always people complaining about that. But like, again, just trying to remind the kid that like investing in yourself is going to put you in a much better spot rather than pushing forward and ending up much worse. Like, and then maybe right now we're talking about maybe not competing at a meet or competing lesser routines at a meet, rather than down the road we're talking about like not even competing at regionals or nationals.
Well, it's like always the question of like the uncertainty, or like that, like if I push through now and it's all okay, I did it, right? But like there is like, it's like I always think about surgery, right? The thing that is so clear about a surgery is that you got a surgery, right? Yep. Because a lot of times like the time it takes to recover from surgeries is the same as if you would have just like rehab, like a lot of injuries. I'm not talking about traumatic injuries. I'm not talking about acute traumatic injuries, but I'm talking about like stuff where it's like kind of been building up or XYZ, right?
Yeah.
Like a lot of the surgeries we have for like pain, right? Or like a hip labral tear or a shoulder labral tear. I think I just saw it was like 60% of people have a labral tear in their hip. It's like, yep, something like that, right? It's super high. So it's like, you know, somebody says, I've got a labral tear. It's like, well, so do I probably, right?
Yeah.
But like, it's just this demarcation though. Like, and so if it's like tricky for you, because it's like the uncertainty of like, well, pulling back is probably the good thing to do. But like, if I just keep pushing and it's okay, then I'm good, right? But like it's tricky, and you got to have a lot of probably objective indicators that kind of help you. Like, what are the indicators that you kind of use to help guide that decision making process for a kid?
So,
a gymnast in general.
Yeah. So typically, like, again, it really depends on like what part of season you're in. But I do tell kids it is okay to push through like a little bit of pain.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's funny because there are some kids that are on the opposite side of the spectrum where they're like, you know, my ankle hurts. Like, I don't want to do this. And then, you know, come to find out, it's like, all right, rate it on a scale from 1 to 10 for me. And I use like the Wong Baker faces scale. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
I'll use that with them because it gives them a little bit more concrete. And they'll be like, oh, it's like a 1 or a 2. It's like, okay, well, that's something we can like push a little bit and maybe monitor. Like, if that's 1 to 2 is ramping up to like a 5 or a 6, that's when we need to scale back.
Yeah.
So I do kind of have that conversation with kids. The other thing, and I mean, this isn't too objective, but like if it's really affecting their performance, like they're not able to like throw for a skill or like punch off the ground, or they feel like they're buckling or something like that in a tumbling pass, like that's definitely an indicator that we need to like scale it back a little bit. Those are like the two big things. I mean, I also talk a lot about like location of pain. So like big areas, especially for gymnasts, like the front of your ankle, your lower back, the front of your shoulder, even like elbow, because OCD or like osteochondritis dissecans is a big thing in gymnasts, and normally it's not caught until you need surgery. So like that's another big one that I advocate for, like getting it checked out early.
Mm-hmm.
I would say those are, I mean, some of them aren't super objective, but those are the things that I normally tell people to watch out for.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's one of the powerful things. It's like starting to observe, like, it's like observing and like seeing how things respond, right, is like really the good indicators of what's going on, right? Whereas like, it's not that there's this perfect demarcation and there's this perfect black and white. Like, if a lot of people, it's like, you're just there is like a amount of granularity that we can create. Like, you're just kind of beat up right now,
right?
Like, and it makes sense with the amount of training volume you've had and what you've been doing and what we got going on. And like, there is like, hopefully we can like deload you before this meet or whatnot, right? But then there's other things. It's like, yeah, you're like super beat up and you're not sleeping, right? And there's all these other indicators that it's like, okay, like, and to get a feel for that, like, that's why I'm when people go and they're like, yeah, my surgeon says XYZ, or like the doctor says XYZ, it's like, they don't have a clear picture. Like, a lot of them, they ask like a couple big questions, and then this isn't to crap on anybody, but, and they also just don't really get like stress recovery adaptation type thing. It's, you know, like a lot of them just don't get all the inputs that go into that.
Yep.
And again, I'm not saying everybody, but a lot of people that are either general medicine or they're orthopods who like, their job is to just fix the shit that breaks. Their job is not to like help people see the rehab, you know, how you rehab or XYZ, right? Do you run into that at all? Like, where there's frustration with like certain disagreements with medical practitioners and stuff?
Yeah, I see a lot. It's like they go to a doctor, like we'll say for an ankle injury. They get an X-ray, you know, they probably don't see anything. So they get an MRI. Maybe you see some like tendonitis or some inflammation.
Yeah.
They get put in a boot for 6 weeks. Can't do anything except for like upper body conditioning. They get the boot off. Doctor says you're good to go. And then they go right back to gymnastics.
To the level of,
yeah. And, you know, sometimes you get a coach that's good at leading people in, which is great. But a lot of times it's either like training load or like how they're moving that caused this. And, you know, the lead in helps with training load, but if they still don't have the capacity, like it's gonna come back again, and then it's just like rinse and repeat until either they get a traumatic injury or they get so frustrated with it that they quit.
Yeah.
So, and it, I mean, it happens with ankles. It happens with wrists, a lot. It happens even more with like lower backs, where the kid just like takes 6 weeks off. Maybe they do some PT that's like, you know, massage, e-stim, ice, dead bugs.
They do low difficulty stuff that actually doesn't. That's the tricky part, right? Because there's this space between the sport practice and like the low level shit that's like introductory that people don't. Right. There's this like this messy gray area, right?
Right. And I'm not saying like I'm not knocking dead bugs. Like I love dead bugs. I do them a lot. But like if you're going from dead bugs to gymnastics, like there's something wrong. Like that kid needs to be jumping and landing. They need to be like, if they have pain with like back handsprings or back walkovers, like they need to be learning how to arch without just using their lower back as a hinge. Like they need to go through that progression. And I'm not saying you need to have like a tumble track and like a trampoline in your clinic, if like that's what you're doing, but like there are still ways to bridge that gap. And then you need to have a conversation with the coach to make sure that they're not, you know, doing 100 back handsprings that are going to hurt their back, so that they can kind of like build up that capacity with enough time.
Yeah. It's an interesting, like, it's so hard because like how do we like educate people on this stuff? And I think that's part of like content, like what you're trying to do with content, right? It's also like having more conversations and like getting to the tricky thing for you a lot of times, and me and you have briefly talked about this, but like it's a lot of times it's like you're trying to work with kids whose parents are deciding what's going on, and like the kids are the intermediary about the communication, and like that's a freaking barrier, right? And because I mean, maybe this is a good way to ask, like, or to think about it, like what are the components of being successful in general for like a high school kid or somebody who wants to compete in gymnastics well for a good period of time? Like what does that look like? What's that recipe in your brain?
That's a good question. I think what it boils down to is like having a good support team. And you know, sometimes that team's bigger. Like sometimes it's just coach, gymnast, parent for whatever reason. But that team can also include like the medical doctor, a nutritionist, a physical therapist, you know, mental health professional. And that's going to depend on the kid. I mean, there are some kids that I know that work with, you know, a sports psychologist because they need to, whether they have anxiety or depression or something like that. And that's amazing when that when that piece comes in. But there are some kids that don't need that. The same thing with like nutritionists, the whole nine. But like having that support team that you need with all those bases covered. And then the big piece is just having all of them communicating, which can get tricky when there's a lot of people involved, or when, and this is a big issue with the gymnastics community, is like when someone has an like way too big of an ego. Sometimes you get that with coaches, parents, or even like doctors. So like having a good team together for that, where everybody's looking for the success of the kid, not the success of themselves.
Yeah.
Or like, I mean, you get it with parents that are trying to like live vicariously through their kids.
Yeah.
Where their kid needs that D1 scholarship or something like that. But yeah, everybody in that team working together with the goal of making sure the kid is successful. And again, that success is different for everybody. Sometimes it's just being healthy. Sometimes it's going to a D1 school. Sometimes it's just having fun.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of moving parts in that equation, right? And a lot of it that like, there's just the thing that can throw so much of it off is, just if there's like one ego in the thing, right? that isn't, this is how it's supposed to be, this is what this is about, XYZ, right? Because like that one ego, and this is kind of like the nature of a lot of things in life. It's yeah, like one disruptor can like throw a lot of things, because it really should be like, hey, what's the kid want, right, within what they know how to do. And then yeah, like the other tricky thing about it is like, youth sports cost money. Keeping your kid in sports costs money, right? Keeping them healthy, playing those sports costs money. But also so does like medical shit down the road.
Yep.
And like mental anguish down the road, right?
Yeah.
Do you think, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, we could talk about that forever. Like, you know, people, I mean, this transcends sports and everything else. Like, it's just, I think part of it's like a culture thing where like people want what benefits them now and don't really think about down the road. So like when you tie that into like your health, like, yeah, you know, a gym membership can be expensive. A personal trainer can be expensive. You know, food can be expensive, but just like you said, you know, medical bills can be expensive. Like mental anguish can be expensive. So I mean,
dude, I think so much of it just boils down to like, me and my brother had this conversation on my golf course once, and it just always stuck it with me. It's like he's like, I just resent the stuff I have to do to take care of myself. Like I gotta make lists, and I gotta like, and I think some of it's just as we get older, life gets more complicated. And so like when you're a kid, like you're being taken care of,
right,
in a lot of ways. Being an adult requires you to basically take care of yourself and do the things you need to do. And the thing too, like, I don't know, I enjoy lifting weights now, right? Like I enjoy going to the gym, but it's not because it was like the fun that sports were at one point in time. It's like, I just get this satisfaction from going and having done it. That took like years to develop.
Yeah.
And I think it takes a lot of people, a lot of ex-athletes too. Like they don't get that satisfaction. Like, cause nobody gives a shit if me and you go and lift weights.
Right.
Like nobody's clapping you on or, you know, supporting you. And when you're an athlete and you get some amount of like praise for doing that your whole life and then it's gone, you got to find the new internal motivation. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's hard. And kind of like what your brother was saying, like there's, when you get to be an adult or even, you know, like, going to college is a big step for a lot of people because like there's so much stuff, like you said, that was just done for you that you have to do now, and nobody's there to like pat you on the back. It is hard.
Yeah. Then like, it's also kind of, it's like, but there's pros and cons, right? You just like, yeah, it's really just, I was listening to a podcast yesterday about like, you got to manage yourself. Like life's about learning to manage yourself. And, it was like, you know, it's almost like one of those cliche bullshitty podcasts, but it's like, it's true. Like what, you know, in, if you're miserable, it's cause you're not managing yourself. Right. And it doesn't mean that there's not external things that are coming out, but like people can respond awesomely in chaos. If they like, they feel like this is cool. Like, okay, I'm like, I'm my life is meaningful right now. Right. It's when that goes away that people are miserable a lot of times.
Right.
Right. And that's like why people get so addicted to drama. It's why people get addicted to like, dude, people get addicted to like being hurt because it gets you attention. Right.
Right.
And it gets you like, we all know that person that was always injured and it was because they were actually scared to like show up and play. And I'm not saying that they were faking it purely, but like they were kind of afraid to like get better. Right. And then they, you know, they faded away. That was kind of a mean thing for me to say there at the end, but we know that.
No, but it's true. Like, I mean, it's like you said, it's like whatever kind of gets you attention.
Yeah.
Like whether it's drama, you know, being hurt, you know, like I was just talking to someone that I was coaching with the other day, I think I was coaching. Like, you know, sometimes you get that kid that's just like a wise ass for the sake of being one, just so that they get attention.
That's me. Like, that's me. 100%.
Yeah. Like class clowns. Like it's the same thing. And I mean, not to say that those kids are like bad, but like they want, you know, sometimes in the gym, like we have groups of like 12 to 15 kids, and like most of those kids want to get better in some sense. So like they're going to do what they need to do to get attention. And I mean, some of them just want, you know, you to look at them for whatever reason. So they might make a joke, they might act out. Like, I don't know, it's part of being a kid. Like I was the same way, just like you said, like sometimes I was just a wise ass to be a wise ass.
I mean, and it's kind of fun. It's like really just learning to like manage that aspect of you. Like
Right.
what I think I learned on is that I was not the most talented kid on the team, but in combination with me trying hard and being like a wise ass, that was where I found my niche, right? And I was like, that's kind of that's pervaded for, or it persisted for a long time. It's when like the thing that gets you attention, there's a great, it's a great cartoon, and it's like a dude lost at sea, and somebody's like trying to give him a life preserver, and he's like, being lost at sea is my brand. Like, and it's like, if you're not willing to give up the thing that's not serving you, which is a lot of like a lot of what we deal with as like coaches and physios, is like the stuff, if people get really real about like what they need, it's pretty easy to tackle those things. It's when like they're kind of not willing to look at like the objective truth about like their situation that it makes really hard. I had a lady a couple days ago, you know, super great lady. She's got a lot of life stress going on. She's like, I just don't think I can lose weight. And, you know, I'm like, what makes you say that? And she's like, well, I've failed so many times. And I'm like, have you ever, I'm just gonna be honest, like, I don't think strictly tracking your food is a really powerful way to lose weight. Like if somebody actually, and I know that there's psychological aspects of that, but like being objective about this is how much I took in and this is how much I need, and like am I actually like moving in the right direction? I think if you actually do that really well, I would be surprised if people didn't, and it doesn't mean it doesn't suck. It sucks. But if you actually do it, you're probably gonna get results. And it might take time. That's the other thing. It like can be really hard. But like when I track like my calories pretty strictly, like I lose weight. When I like, and when I'm kind of doing that thing where it's like, I didn't track the, you know, the handful of M&Ms that I had, and I didn't track that thing, then you don't, right? Or you maybe do it, but it's inconsistent, right? But I'm like, have you ever tracked? And she's like, you know, she had this revelation that like it's not, I've never actually tracked, and I'm like, it's not that I can't do it, I am unwilling to do that. And she said that, and it was like kind of, you could tell she's like, but she accepted the responsibility and the reality of the situation. It's like, now we can actually move forward, right? But a lot of people never get themselves there, right? And sometimes I don't think I would have asked that question 2 years ago, or probably even like a year ago, because I wouldn't have been confident enough in like, I'm just going to be straight up with you. For something to change, things have to change, right? And that's hard. You got to get to that level of not giving a shit, because I care about her, right? But like her feelings, quote unquote, are like, they're kind of holding her back, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can say the same thing with like gymnastics. Like, and it stinks because sometimes I'm dealing with like a 14-year-old kid who like isn't necessarily always in touch with like reality or like their own feelings. So like, but it's the same thing. Like I tell them all the time, like you got to do the stuff that sucks. And a lot of times that's like, you know, basics, strength, mobility, flexibility, stuff like that. Like, and it sucks for kids too, because like we're in such an age where like everything's on social media. So like they see, you know, all the big tricks that other people are doing. And it like sometimes I even have to remember myself, because like I'll be like scrolling or something and looking at like gymnastics Instagrams and stuff, and I'll be like, these kids are so good. But then I realize like, oh, they have to do all the same stuff that everybody else does. Like, but it's just like you were saying, like it comes down to like, are they really doing all the things that they need to do? And you know, you do get those kids that are like a little bit more mature, and they're like, they say, you know, I need to do more of like the sucky stuff, the hard stuff, the handstands, the like basics.
Yeah.
And those are the kids that, you know, make it. They do what they need to do.
Dude, it's crazy because like I just look at it over and over again, and like it's whenever I push or whenever I try to force something, shit goes bad. When I like just say, okay, what are the basics? What are the core foundational things that I should get good at? And you just focus on those things, like good stuff usually happens, right? Yep. And it's like it's kind of hard because like your ability to squat heavy weight or deadlift heavy weight, like you can like make it happen, but you inevitably like things start to break down a little bit, right? And it doesn't mean that like adding weight to the bar isn't important, because it is, but there is this like there's this threshold that like that was good practice, right? That was good practice. Like do that over and over again and like the good stuff will come. And then there's this like you forced it on that day because you were getting like greedy, right? Or like, and it's like if I don't know if this happens in gymnastics, but it's like somebody's working on a move and they stay and try to hit it like 50 times and then they finally do it, where it's like you should have just closed it up and came back like a couple weeks later and you would have got it, right?
Yeah.
Like I don't know if that's is that a thing that you see, that like maybe the kid's confidence when they hit it works, but maybe it also just what they did was they overreached and then like they can't repeat that, and then it like they it also maybe was just too much, right?
Yeah, I see that happen a lot, where like, you know, they're working on whatever skill it is, and you know, the plan might be to do like five of them, and then it's like, oh, they're really close, so they go for 6, 7, 8, 9, and like it keeps going. And yeah, sometimes they do get it on like 10 or 11 or 12, but a lot of times like they just keep getting worse.
Yeah.
So like this is, I don't know, maybe a year ago I was like coaching a group of kids, and I was saying like, you know, typically with anything, like if you take like a trend, they follow like a parabola, right? And
yep.
And in an ideal world, we stop right at the top.
Yeah.
And then we move on to another skill or another event or something like that. And sometimes we push a little bit, but most of the time we try to end right there, because like you're developing, you know, you might be developing bad habits, you might push through your threshold and get hurt. But it again, like sometimes it's hard to convey those things. And like sometimes you're just so close and you just want to like keep going and keep going and keep going. But
it's hard because there's some legitimate times where it's like you should keep trying, but it's probably because like you're getting closer, right? Whereas what there's a differentiation between like if you're like getting closer and closer, like I've never done like a, can you do a backflip? I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Dude, yeah. All right, maybe I need to take some like, but if I want to, I kind of do want to try to learn, right? But like if it's like it's so much of that is like the fear component, right? And the commitment component of it, right? If you're like getting better, then it's like okay. But if there's like a fatigue component and a like like you have to hype yourself up to get there, like it's just one of those things that I don't think you're actually physiologically ready for it, and so you might as well just like, it's like, you know, a couple of my lifter, like a guy that's his name's Luke, like he hit PRs 3 weeks before his last meet, and then it was good, but it's good to hit PRs, but he couldn't replicate it on like the meet day. So it's one of those things where that's a learning experience where it's like, all right, dude, we need to like, you need to hold back. And I don't know if it's mental or if it's physical, but like if it was, I mean, it's probably everything's mental and physical. That's the other thing, right? Like your physiologic readiness in combination with your mental, like, let's do this, are going to work together. Right. But now we know, it's like, all right, dude, if you're hitting PRs 3 weeks out, you're probably like going ham when we need to hold that back. And it's tricky because sometimes it is like, is it just a skill thing or is it like a preparation thing? And if it's a skill thing, it's just like, okay, maybe we're going to be good. But that's the thing too, where it's like, you only get so many opportunities. How do we do this? Right. But you also got to learn, there's a lot of sports psychology and all this shit too. Right.
Yeah. So. And I get that a lot in gymnastics too. Like, you know, trying to do something either a day or two before a meet. And it's an important lesson to learn. And for me, one of like the big things that I've had to like l I guess myself learn over like my coaching career is like sometimes the kid has to learn it themselves. Like
Yeah.
they're not gonna
And you
listen
gotta
to
let people
you.
fail.
Yeah. Like, you know, I've been coaching, I don't know, maybe like 15, 16 years now. But like sometimes I just tell a kid something and they don't believe me, and then they need to find it out on their own. And like it sucks to see them fail for, you know, whatever reason. But like if they failed and learned an important lesson, then it's a win. And again, it kind of sucks because they don't always see it as a win, but like, you know, learning those important, just like life lessons is, in my opinion, more important than, you know, any gold medal that they'll get at a meet.
Yeah, no, and it's true. That's such a, it's such a true cliche. Like you learning that life lesson, like if you're gonna win the meet, you're probably gonna win the meet, right? But if you like getting the, like learning the lesson, like I always go back to like Tiger Woods should have learned a lot of life lessons that would have probably made his life a little bit better along the way to becoming as good of a champion as he was, right?
Yeah.
That's why I kind of ultimately like I view, and this is not a critique of Tiger Woods. I don't know Tiger Woods. He's probably a nice enough guy anymore. Tiger Woods had a lot of shit going on as he was growing up. That's for damn sure. But Roger Federer, completely different human being, and like
Yep.
seems like a just a really relatively well balanced human being, right? And a lot of that was just like there's all these lessons. There's also a great book called Range,
I
that.
was gonna say, you've read Range, haven't you?
Yeah. Because you've read Range, right? Yeah.
Yep.
And it's like, and it's just the comparison and the contrasting, like being hyper focused on the goal, which can work, or being oriented around this process, and especially like developing kind of a well-rounded human. Like it's crazy because we go back to, I think being a generalist allows for a greater depth that when you just become super specialized, you can't go outside of that specialization. And that's the tricky thing that a lot of people get down the hole of, right?
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. And I mean, that's another cool thing about gymnastics is like it's almost like six sports in one.
Yeah.
Because of, well, for men it's like six sports in one.
Yeah.
So they end up learning a lot as far as like from a movement perspective, which I really like. But it also, I mean sports in general teaches you a lot of life lessons.
Dude, that's why sports, yeah, sports are the goat for, and continuing to play sports is so awesome. Like, it's fun and continuing to do stuff that's relatively competitive because you learn a lot about yourself and you learn to manage shit that if you stop doing it, you don't manage, right? So, yeah, dude, we went for an hour. This is good. I gotta go pee so bad because I agree with when we started, but it's all good. No, this was good. I appreciate you coming on.
I
What
appreciate you having me.
where can people find you?
So best way to find me is Instagram. I'm at Matthew Power PT. That's pretty much the only way to find me. But all of what I do is on Instagram. Trying to work on other stuff, but right now, Instagram is where I'm at.
Between coaching and, you know, being a rehab professional who's also gymnastics oriented. I mean, yeah, dude, you're blazing the path. So like just keep finding ways to be innovative. And like I think me and you talk about this on a regular basis. It's just like getting like people lifting, getting people strong in other ways is really powerful. So I think for any parents who might listen to this or kids, it's like diversify your athletic profile via getting stronger and yeah. So
Yeah,
love it.
it's only gonna help you in the long run,
Yeah, 100%.
whether you're doing gymnastics or something else.
Yeah. All right, man. I appreciate you. I'll link your Instagram in the show notes and no, appreciate having you on.
Thanks for having me.
Peace, buddy.
Later.